The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Week or about your meditation practice. They say, I'll teach you something first. So the Buddhism part of all this. In Buddhism, it says you make really good karma for yourself if you ask questions. Why is that? good karma. let's have more questions, more karma.
I have a question.
Yes.
Once you mentioned talking about guilt and guilt arising, just kind of aimless, free-floating guilt, not...
Yeah. Guilt is short for guilt.
What?
Guilt is short for guilt.
Okay, you know about guilt then. So if you want to say a little more about that, like...
A bit more about guilt. Again, you know, the Buddhism part of it all. There's more chairs in here if you want to come in. Please come in if you'd like to be inside. So the thing about Buddhism says that guilt is an unnecessary emotion. And it's actually a waste of time to have it. Because in Buddhist analysis, Buddhist psychology, they analyze guilt as a form of hostility, a kind of aversion, more than just, you know, I did something wrong and I'm guilty, as a form of, the feeling of guilt, I mean, legal guilt, and that's okay, you know, yes, you know, but the idea of feeling guilty, rather than guilt, because of how that's a lot of self-criticism and hostility, the way Buddhism analyzes it, it's appropriate to feel remorse, to feel regret. You know, if you've done something you feel bad about, feel regret, and then learn from that, and be forward-looking. Problem with guilt, it tends to be backward-looking, and we tend to be weighed down by the past. The thing is to look at our behavior, and if there's things that we don't feel good about, to look at it enough so we can learn from it. Don't ignore it or deny it ever happened. Learn from it and then be forward-looking. How can I do better in the future? So a certain level of healthy regret or remorse is a good thing. But this criticism of guilt, this weighing down of guilt, is considered an unnecessary emotion to have.
What about fear?
Yeah. Fear is a good one. There's many kinds of fear. And so we have to kind of look at the different kinds of fear, what's appropriate, what's not. So anxiety, psychologists nowadays often distinguish between fear and anxiety, where anxiety is imaginary. It's fear that has an imaginary source. You're anxious about what's going to happen. If the mountain lion comes in here just now, there was a mountain lion just last year, just a few blocks from here, up and down by Alameda, right? So if it's just, it's possible it could wander in. And I was in a meditation center once, meditation hall, and the window was open and a bobcat jumped in. But the mountain lion comes in and we see it. I think fear is just a completely normal and appropriate response. The question is, have you learned how to relate to fear? Do you have the ability, do you have a presence of mind where you can be mindful of it, be wise about it, respond quickly and appropriately, or do you succumb to fear and just kind of get lost in fear and get confused? So mindfulness practice can help you help a lot with how do you relate to fear when it's appropriate to feel something. That's one thing. But if you're sitting here, because I've told you now that bobcats come into meditation hall centers, you know, and now for every time you ever go to a meditation center, you're anxious, you know, oh my God, what am I going to do? It's a dangerous place, I should... You know, and then you started getting into the world of imagination. And so anxiety is said to be more imaginary. And when it's imaginary and fantasy, then often it's not necessary. A lot of people are weighed down. Chronic fear is usually chronic anxiety. And a lot of it has to do with self-referential in nature. How other people are going to see me, how people are going to see me, how I'm going to be seen, how I'm going to hold up to some personal ideals, am I going to be made a fool of? most people are not anxious about mountain lions, imaginary things mostly. Sometimes it's, you know, we project into the future the what might happen, and sometimes it's realistic. I mean, you should never, you should not do that. But you know, there's plenty of imaginary anxieties that people can spend a lifetime behind. So again, so what mindfulness does, it helps us, it doesn't, mindfulness is a great practice because it doesn't condemn or criticize or make you feel bad for any emotion you have. So if you have anxiety and you know it's imaginary, not real, mindfulness doesn't make you feel bad about having it. Mindfulness encourages you to turn towards it and hold it in a kind way, but to see it very clearly for what it is, and in that process, not be pushed around by it, not be caught by it, not be in its orbit. And then you can start being wise about how you relate to it, and you can say, well, you know, that's, you can see clearly, oh, this is an imagination. It's, I don't know if this is true. And then look at it again more carefully and say, well, maybe this is a good reason to be careful. I can imagine there could be a danger here. Or maybe, you know, this is really, you know, unneeded, this fear. So there's a lot I could say about fear, but is that enough for now? Yes, in the back there. The green light should be on.
It's on?
Yeah, it's on.
Okay. I was wondering whether or not there's a distinction between a meditative state and a hypnotic state. Like meditating versus self-hypnosis.
Yeah. I think there's a range of what people define as hypnosis and a range of what people define as meditation. So probably there's some overlap between the two, depending on how it's defined and what goes on in them. So I don't want to make a categorical statement. But generally, from the Buddhist point of view, which might not be accurate for what some hypnosis is about, is that with Buddhism, Buddhist meditation, there's always a presence of mind. You're always in a certain kind of way, you're always in control. You know what's happening. You can make choices. You have the ability to choose what you do. You know what's happening. There's presence. In certain kinds of hypnosis, you don't know what's going on. And sometimes, you know, these kind of stage stunts where they hypnotize people, and the hypnotist says, you know, scratch your ear, and everybody scratches their ear, and lift up your arm, and everybody lifts their arm. And they're kind of half asleep. They don't even know they're doing it. And he snaps their finger, and they wake up, and they don't remember having done it. So with hypnosis, sometimes there's a loss of self-knowledge, self-understanding, presence. There's a loss of a certain degree of control and choice in what you do. Whereas in Buddhist meditation, there's always a presence of mind. You're always alert and mindful, and you're always have some ability to choose what you do. So even though it might be very, very deep states of meditation, you don't lose your, you're not going to be doing things that, you know, later you, why was it, why, you know, your friends tell you, you know what you just did? No, I don't. That makes sense? So again, I don't know if that does justice to the world of hypnosis. It's a big world, but that's kind of from the Buddhist point of view what we see. Okay. So welcome back. Oh, yes.
What's the difference between mindfulness and meditation, and meditative mindfulness, and dreaming?
Well, dream, it depends. I guess if it's, some people do what's called lucid dreaming, where there's a high degree of attention and awareness of what's happening as people dream. And so that would just be, that could be interpreted or described as being mindful dreaming, because same kind of attention, presence, and all that. Most people who remember their dreams don't have much presence in the middle of it. They kind of know they're dreaming sometimes. Sometimes after you wake up, you remember the dream. Sometimes you kind of know, but it's not a clear, acute, lucid kind of knowing where you know that you know. When in mindfulness meditation, the focus is on to really recognize, be aware of what's happening while it's happening. When practice gets strong, not that people think this way, but you could if you wanted to, you know that you know. It isn't simply that you know that you're breathing, for example, but it's the knowing is so clear that you know that you know.
How about daydreaming? That would be similar to lucid dreaming.
Daydreaming. Most daydreams, I think usually when the term daydreaming is used, in my kind of limited vocabulary world, is you're kind of lost in the daydream. You're not really, there's not much presence of mind. You're kind of lost and being pulled away and swaying. And in the world of meditation, there's a lot of daydreaming, and people hardly know that they're daydreaming and that they go off for 5 minutes and they come back. And now sometimes there can be creative daydreaming where you're kind of with it and kind of following and tracking it. So maybe there's some mindfulness there. If it's lucid, if it's really clear. But generally, if it's really clear, the mindfulness, and really sees clearly what's going on, daydreaming will come to a stop. And we'll see that today. Today, the topic today is going to be thinking, which overlaps with daydreaming.
I have a quick question about... So we're here to do mindful meditation,
yes.
But what's the difference between mindful meditation and other types of meditation?
It's a good question. So... the word meditation is a very, very broad term. And to tell someone you do meditation would give them about as much information as you told them, I do sports. Because, you know, do you do baseball? Do you do boxing? Do you curling? It's so many things, so many different things of sports, right? So same thing, meditation. There's a lot of different kinds of meditation. And the people who are not familiar with it might think they're all the same, but actually there's many, many different kinds. The primary distinction that we use in Buddhism between different kinds of meditation is between those meditations that focus on a clear recognition of the present moment, clear noticing, mindful awareness of what's happening, and the kind of meditation that focuses on concentration, where the primary focus is in developing deep states of calm. But the deep states of calm... don't come with much understanding. You don't see clearly what's going on. So, for example, it's possible to go into a deep state of very satisfying and meaningful calm. It often comes along with states of bliss, rapture, even at times, quite wonderful. And then you go out here at 101 at 5 o'clock in the afternoon in this rush hour traffic, and you get irritated and frustrated and. You know, you do things with your finger to the other drivers. You find it, and you hardly know, what was I doing? How did that happen? Because in learning strong concentration meditation, sometimes there's not a lot of self-knowledge that comes as part of it, self-understanding. Whereas in mindfulness meditation, we're trying to be clearly aware of what goes on in the present moment so we can track the impulses, the movements, the feelings, the thoughts that arise. And we can see the inner causes and conditions for not just that we're irritated, but why we got irritated. What were we holding on to? What were we attached to? What were we believing? What were the different things going on inside of us? So early.
Example, I'm sorry.
Oh, so an example of that. So for example, what comes to mind about Highway 101 at 5 o'clock is that maybe I just love having the convertible down and having the air going through my hair and showing everyone what a great driver I am and zipping around and everything and my whole identity is built up around being a fast, sporty guy. And I'm stuck like a traffic, a parking lot out there on 101 and my hair is not going in the wind and and no one can see what a great driver I am. And so the irritation is, that my identity and being this beautiful guy, is not being, championed. And so I can have a chance to watch and see that happen. And I have a choice then. I don't have to be that kind of person. So that's a silly example, but there can be many examples. One example would be some people... are always in a hurry. That's just their mode of driving, to be in a hurry. Like, somehow it's important to get somewhere. And you don't want to waste any time. And so you get out there in rush hour traffic, and you're not going very fast, and that whole impulse to get something and not waste any time begins showing itself. And you can watch it show itself, and you can question it and say, I'm feeling that old feeling. that I don't want to waste any time. Do I have to believe it? Do I have to act on that impulse? Do I have to let that rule my life and get irritated and get upset? Or can I just see that impulse as an impulse, as a thought, let go of it, let it recede to the background, and stay here and do my mindfulness breathing? You know, and by the time I get where I'm going, I could be relaxed. So the mindfulness, you know, it helps you to understand and sort through what's going on. And what I've known people who've done a lot of concentration meditation, it's very meaningful, it can be very healing, it can be very helpful practice, but I've known people who've done a lot of that who don't have a lot of self-understanding. And they can't track what's going on in real time very well. And so what they tend to do then is they get frazzled, they get stressed, and then they want to go back and get concentrated again. And their solution is always to get calm. It's kind of like always bypassing and avoiding looking at their life very honestly. Whereas the mindfulness, we're not trying to bypass anything. We're trying to enter our life very honestly and clearly. And in the process of that, discover what we're doing so that we don't have to get stressed to begin with. Not always compensating for the stress or avoiding it, but in a sense being very mindful of what the causes and conditions are, because we can be present. And then begin questioning what we do, seeing what we do, and being able to choose alternatives earlier. Does that make sense? So it's a wonderful path to be on, the path of self-understanding and knowledge that comes with this. So that's why we say, even though this path, this meditation, mindfulness, can bring a lot of calm, it's understood to be very effective for stress reduction. In the Buddhist world, we tend not to emphasize the stress reduction and calm aspects too much, because then people sometimes don't appreciate the self-knowledge and understanding that come from this path as well. Make sense? So today, maybe you'll see some of this. So today we're going to do mindfulness of thinking. And it's a hugely important part of people's lives. Some people think in words, some people think more in images. Some people are very closely identified with their thinking, so much that who they are is inseparable from the thinking. I think, therefore I am. Some people never question your thinking, so their thinking is obviously true. Whatever I'm thinking must be the name of the game, must be what's going on. And an important part of mindfulness practice is to learn how to turn the attention to thinking. When people do concentration meditation, thinking is considered a distraction, and the idea is to stop thinking. And that's the goal, is to have very few or no thoughts at all. That can happen in this kind of meditation here, but we don't set it up as the goal. Right? The goal always in this practice is to see clearly what's happening. And if what's happening is thinking, we don't make thinking a problem. We don't criticize it. It's one more thing to pay attention to. So I know some of you who are doing this practice probably have noticed that the primary thing that's made it difficult for you to stay on your breath, stay present, is your thinking. And so that can make it very frustrating, and then it's very natural in that frustration to consider thinking as the enemy, the problem. If only I didn't think. That thinking is the issue. And you bat it away. But today you get to think. And today what I'm going to teach you is how to turn the attention to include thinking as part of the meditation, so that in a sense you're in charge rather than your thinking. Have you ever thought about that? Who's in charge of you? Your thinking or you? Are you your thoughts? So here's an interesting question to kind of entice you into the topic today. When you don't use thinking to tell yourself who you are, who are you? Who are you when you don't tell yourself a thought? You still are, aren't you? Do you need to have thoughts to tell you who you are? Many times people are telling themselves a lot of stories, a lot of thoughts. It's the medium and currency in which many people understand themselves and the world around them. But there's another way. And so this mindfulness is another way. It's because it's another way from thinking, it's a very radical thing. So I'm going to introduce you to some aspects of this today, and I'm hoping that doing so will cast a little different perspective on your life and a different perspective on a companion that's been with you for years and years and years that you've never taken the time to get to know. Many people have never stopped and take a look and get to know their thinking in a deeper way. They just kind of take it for granted. Kind of like they say, you know, a fish doesn't see the water they swim in. Many humans don't see the thoughts that they're swimming in. Or don't see it very clearly. So, let's do a meditation, and then I'll do a little guidance around this near the end. So taking an upright posture. And I realize that many of you might be tired after a day of work or whatever. And so it might be helpful to sit up a little straighter, just to have a little more energy. And you can close your eyes, if you feel really tired, you're welcome to keep them open if that keeps you awake. But then the idea is to have your eyes looking down at about 45 degrees and not looking anything in particular. Some people find it useful to do a little procedure, ritual, each time you begin meditation, because the familiarity of a regular procedure sometimes helps us kind of settle in and get into it. So, for example, you could take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you breathe in deeply, to feel the ribs, the rib cage, front and back, to feel it expand outward. And then as you exhale, to let it all settle in, settle down. Breathing in deeply, and then gently exhaling and letting the shoulders soften. And after a few deep breaths, letting your breathing return to normal. And with an easy, normal breath, scan through your body to see if there's any places of tension or holding where that you might easily be able to soften and relax. Some people will soften their muscles of their face, forehead and eyes, jaws. It might not be possible to relax the shoulders, but it might be possible to soften around them. Ease up a little around the shoulders. The area of the shoulder blades. Some people find it helpful to soften around the heart, middle of the chest. Maybe as you exhale. And it can often be helpful to soften the belly. If the belly is chronically tense, that's okay. Just a few times in the beginning of a sitting, see if you can soften it, and then let it be, let it do what it wants. So somewhere in your body, there might be a place where you feel your breathing most clearly. It might not be that clear, but more clear than anywhere else. It might be the belly moving or the chest moving. It might be the air going in and out through the nostrils or traveling down the throat, windpipe. See if you can find where the breathing seems most compelling, easiest to feel. If you have trouble feeling your breathing, you can put your hand on your belly or your chest to feel the movement. And there's a nice term for that place where you feel your breathing. Location where you're most prominent or most compelling. Sometimes it's called the home base or the home for the breathing, home for attention. See if we can make this part of our body a home for your awareness, a place that's comfortable and safe, engaging. Settle into that part. Bring it into focus, the experience of breathing in your body. And as you experience your breathing, notice how the body experiences the inhalation is different than the exhalation. And every time you exhale, if you can remember, let go of your thinking. Not pushing it away or being harsh to your thinking. But let your thinking kind of float, your thinking float away, settle away. Let go of your thoughts whenever you can remember, so you can better feel your breathing, sense your breathing. Hang in there, linger with the body breathing. noticing if you start thinking about things or commenting about it, judging things. See if you can let go of it. Or let it recede, your thinking recede to the background. So you're mostly focusing on your breathing, the body breathing. It's the place to come home to be with. And if something makes it difficult for you to be with the breathing, remember that mindfulness is the practice of recognizing what's happening. So recognize what that difficulty is. Simple, open recognition, as if it's okay. See if you can let go of your thinking and begin again. Begin again with your breathing. Always begin again. So now, as part of this period of meditation, rather than letting go of your thoughts and coming back to the breathing, let go of your breathing, let go of focusing on the breathing, and let yourself think as you wish. And if you have trouble thinking now that you're allowed to, maybe you can choose something to think about that you've been concerned about during the day. Hopefully it's not too bad news. And then when you allow yourself to think as normally you would, notice whether you tend to think more in words or more in images. Either way is fine. Notice how it is for you. And then if you think in words mostly, as if there's a loudspeaker somewhere in your body, Where's the location of where those words appear? Can you localize it? Might be hard to localize it, but it's probably not in your ankle. It's probably not in your kneecap. It's probably not in your earlobes. Can you kind of begin searching? Where is it that loudspeaker occurs? If you think more in images, is there a location where the images are projected or a screen upon which they appear? And if you're able to notice a kind of a location where the thinking occurs, feel that part of your body. And see if you can notice if there's any tension or pressure or energy, agitation, tightness, tautness. Anything that comes along in that area that comes along with the thinking. Is there pressure to think? Is there tension together with the thinking? Is there tiredness connected to the thinking? You've been thinking for a long time. Maybe you're weary of all the thinking. And then as if that location where your thinking occurs is like a muscle, the thinking muscle, as you exhale, see if you can relax the thinking muscle. Relax the pressure, the tension. Maybe letting that part of the thinking area spread out, open up. And then return to your breathing. Feel the body breathing back to that home place. And for another minute or two, just before the end, just hang in there with your breathing. As if whatever else is going on, you can put aside or let it recede in the background and devote yourself to one breath at a time, breathing in and breathing out. And then to end this sitting, take a couple of deep breaths. Feel your body against a chair, your cushion. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Well, it doesn't take much analysis to realize that a hugely important part of human life is thinking, because thinking is the medium through which we have concepts, ideas that we are needed to kind of make our way through this complex world. But the process of thinking, there's two things. There's a process of thinking and there's a content of thinking. There's what you're thinking, and then there's the process by which you're thinking. So for, I mean, maybe kind of a little example of what I'm trying to say is I could be holding the striker in my hand, and so the thing I'm holding is a striker. But if I ask, what's the process of holding the striker? Then rather than focusing on the striker, then I focus on what's happening with my fingers and my hand and how I'm gripping it. And am I gripping it really hard for dear life? Am I holding it loosely? I'm about to lose it. You know, what's the process like? Shifts the attention away from the striker to how it's being held. So same thing with thinking. Most people, when they think, focus on the content of what they're thinking about. The story that's so fascinating, the thing they're guilty about, whatever it might be. But in mindfulness meditation, that's certainly an important part to focus on, but we're actually more interested in the process, because the process is always happening in the present moment. So, and that's a different thing. The process is made up of different aspects. And one of the aspects of thinking is the physical side of it. Many times people think that thinking is kind of, I don't know, ephemeral, or it's, you know, disembodied, or it's kind of like happening kind of in some kind of the original cloud that it's up there, it's all stored and has a large capacity. But the it requires thinking is a process. It's actually a very complicated process, and it involves a lot of our physiology, psychology, neurology coming into play to do this very innocent seemingly thing called, or not so innocent thing called thinking. And one of the things that involved with thinking is there's always some physical aspect to it, physical sensation, physical manifestation of it. It's sometimes very hard to see, and sometimes with subtle thinking, you only see it in very deep meditation, the physical aspect of it. But sometimes it's really obvious. You have a headache. You know, you're thinking, and you get a headache, and you see, wow, there's a lot of tension connected to my thinking. But one of the things to notice when you're thinking is if you're able to find kind of a location for it, that sometimes gives you access to what it feels like physically, the physical feeling, the sensation of what it's like you're doing the thinking. Now, were any of you able to notice something in that exercise? Yes, please.
That was really, really cool, because I spent years doing that thing where I sit and I watch thoughts go by and let them go.
Yeah.
And when you said, let the breath go and concentrate on the thinking, it was so joyful. I felt like I could jump into water, into a clear lake. It was just really touching.
Great.
It was great.
So it must be a relief to not to always
treat... It was very relieving.
Not thinking that thinking is always the problem and you have to dismiss it, yeah?
It was very joyful and very relieving, and it was definitely here in the heart area. It was very beautiful.
And what happened to your thinking then?
It went away. I couldn't even tell you what I knew in that moment what I was thinking about, but after that it was gone. It was just very joyful.
Nice. Thank you. So you're left with kind of quiet joy.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, thank you.
I thought about what you were saying about how when you noticed your thinking, you kind of noticed something about yourself. And when you said, okay, now you can concentrate on the thinking, I was like, what do I want to think about? And immediately started thinking about, like, horrible, horrible things. Like, I just thought about, like, all the loss and betrayal and, like, pain in my life, and just, like, really, like, through, like, this montage, there was music and, like, scenes and stuff, and I was seeing everything, and I was like, why am I choosing this of all the things I could think about?
That's a great question. Did you have an answer?
No.
Yeah, great. So it gives you a chance sometimes by looking and noticing what you're thinking. It gives you the ability to say, to choose, to question, is this really what I want to be thinking and be involved in? But if we don't really see clearly our thinking, then it might be an automatic pilot and we end up thinking all kinds of things that maybe, you know, are not to our best, you know, to our, for, you know, for our best. So in terms of physically, did anybody notice anything physically or location or physical sensation connected to thinking? Is that too hard to notice or too subtle? Or yes, so if you could use the mic here, please.
Yes, I felt the thinking. It was sort of in the back of my skull, and it was sort of tickly.
Really. Tickly?
That's what it felt like. It was, it was like a soda.
Bubbly soda.
Yeah, and it was sort of nice. But then when you did say about the stopping thinking, then it shifted, and it also came down to my heart. That mm-hmm. was very interesting.
So were you able to relax that part of you?
Yeah, and it sort of just spiraled slowly, mm-hmm. like a cloud away, as you said.
Great. And then when you came back to your breathing, was it a little bit easier to be with your breath than before?
Yeah, I felt just a bit, there weren't so many sensations.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. So back on the stage.
I felt like I had left my body and I was swimming in like a pool of light, and I kept noticing that I was distracted by the thought of my blood sugar, and I kept thinking, oh, that's not good. Oh, that's because of your blood sugar. And then I would go back into this pool of light, and it seemed like I was able to kind of move in that, but I would be pulled back by the anxiety of something not being quite right.
Uh-huh. And could you localize a place in your body where the anxious thoughts were?
It was almost like I was wearing headphones and there was something covering my head, and it was kind of, there was like this, it was like on my back, and uh-huh. I was picturing it as this thing that uh-huh. was kind of forcing the thoughts.
Yeah. Great, that was great. And did you get any sense that there was pressure or heaviness or tightness connected to that?
Yeah, a lot of tightness, a lot of, like my body felt agitated, but my mind felt free.
Uh-huh. And then were you able to relax that when I instructed you to relax that tension?
Yeah, I was able to let it go. And then as I would, I was able to dismiss that I was anxious about my physicality because it was all a fear that was coming up based on past events.
So by relaxing that tension, then it was easier to let go of the anxiety
right.
and those thoughts? Great. That's an important lesson. So what happens sometimes is that when we are thinking something really juicy, something there's a lot of strength behind our thinking, that there's often tension or pressure someplace in the system, or tightness or agitation or energy or something. If you let go of thinking, if the only thing you're letting go of is the content, and you keep letting go of the content, it leaves the process intact. So in other words, or it leaves the pressure still there, or the tension still there, the agitation still there. And that pressure and agitation then will just, it's like a little factory, they'll just pump out more thoughts. So if you have the experience, you come back, you let go of your thoughts and you go back to your breathing, and then you're thinking again. You go back to your breathing and thinking again. It's a sign that you need to pay more careful attention to what's going on. And one of the access points to seeing what's going on is to find the location and see if there's any pressure or tension or tightness or agitation or energy or something in that field and those categories that's connected to the thinking. Some people feel it in their forehead, very common in the back of the head, sometimes in the middle of the head. sometimes it can be some other places in the body. It could be the tension can be in the jaws, sometimes the neck and the shoulders even, a variety of places that people will feel that physicality, but often in the head, sometimes in the chest. And then to be mindful of thinking, because it's a process of different things going on, you can ground yourself in the mindfulness of the body exercise, the physical, the mindful of actually what's the physical feeling, what it's like to be thinking. It's a skill to learn that, because if we're really preoccupied with a content, it can be hard to convince ourselves it's okay to let go of the content, focusing on the content, and feel the other side of thinking, which is the physicality of it. And then either just hang out with it, and just sometimes just recognizing it can soften by itself. But it's also fine to intentionally try to relax it, soften it. And then if the tension, the pressure is no longer there so much, then there's not such a strong impulse to think again. And then it's easier then to stay more focused on the breath, because that's not being pulled off. Now, I hope that makes sense to some of you. To some of you, it doesn't make sense at all.
Right. I need more concrete examples. I mean, when he said sugar, was that a fear of him having diabetes and his sugar level is high?
I'll give you an example of what I'm trying to say. So someone asks a question like you're asking now. I understand you, but say I don't understand you. So I furrow my brow and my eyes get really zeroed in and trying to understand what you're saying. What is it that she's saying? And this is really important and I got to figure it out. And I'm trying, what is it? You know, and I'll cut. And then I kind of turn attention. I feel all this tension in my eyes and my forehead. And I said, wow, there's a lot of tension having those thoughts. What if I relax that tension? And then I'm not so caught in trying to figure out what that question is. And then I might even actually be more creative and able to listen more deeply. Because I couldn't listen because I was so caught up in my... So that's an example. You find some place where it's physical that's connected to that kind of thinking, and then relax it. And then, but if I don't relax it, then that whole pressure and the emotions around it are still there, kind of pushing the whole thinking thing. Does that make sense? No.
Half of it,
that's good. What's the other half?
I guess the solution.
What solution?
Well,
what would a solution
there
be?
There was a, you said he had to, I was trying to think of what trying to understand what he was feeling, and then had a, correct it or make him feel more comfortable.
So you were trying to... Oh, you're trying to understand what he was feeling, why he was feeling, and do something and make him more comfortable.
Or just figure out how whatever he did later made him more comfortable.
To benefit,
I didn't know
yeah,
what
great.
He did later
great.
Made him more comfortable.
So this is great. So what you were trying to do,
right.
it's a really healthy thing for human beings to do sometimes. But what you describe now is in our world, we sometimes call it fix-it mode. And fix-it mode has its time and place, but not in meditation. And there's something actually more profound that can happen in meditation by not trying to fix and solve all our problems, but rather to see more deeply, to look more deeply and see what's there. And so rather than trying to understand why am I thinking that and what's the solution to the feeling anxiety, to actually feel the process, the immediate right now, like the man up there, I don't think you solved your anxiety. Did you, the root cause of your anxiety?
Could I see...
Did you understand the root cause of your anxiety and why you...
Yes.
Oh, you did? Oh, well. So much for that. I was hoping you didn't. Because sometimes you don't have to solve things. And solving things often, again, it's an important place in life. But often when we are solving things and trying to fix things, it comes along with a lot of belief structures, a lot of self-identity issues. It comes up along with a lot of emotions, ideas of what's supposed to happen, should happen. You can't really relax most deeply if you're always trying to fix things. And you can't actually be free. Part of what we're trying to do with mindfulness is to have, for example, anxiety, and learn how to be free, how to be happy, how to be independent of the anxiety without it having to go away. And if you're always trying to fix something, then your happiness is always dependent on fixing something. And the kind of freedom that this practice is looking towards is not dependent on fixing anything. Make some sense? Little bit. So accepting it is a very important part of this process, seeing it. So with this thinking, if thinking becomes strong in meditation, so that it's hard to be with your breathing, then the instruction is don't fight it. And if it's easy to let go of it. It's always easy to let go, just let go. Probably just surface thoughts. But if it's not easy to let go, and it keeps reoccurring, then the task is to let go of your breathing and then clearly acknowledge that you're thinking. Look thinking right in the eye. Thinking, I see you. I know you're thinking. Because if you keep dismissing it and letting go of it, it just comes back. But if you really look at it and really see it clearly, sometimes the juice and the energy for thinking begins to dissipate. So to really recognize this is what's happening. And then if it continues, you can kind of look more deeply. What else is going on when I'm thinking? There's a content and there's a process. If I look at the process, not just the content, what's the process like? And one of the things to look at is where it's occurring in the body, or is there any physical tension, pressure that's connected to it? Then if there is, then very gently, calmly, do tension meditation. Just feel that in your body, let it be. Remember, we're not trying to fix something here, so don't be in a hurry to try to make it go away. First, you want to get to know something. The default for this practice here is always get to know it better. Get to know it better. Some people's default is get rid of it or hold on to it. We're trying to just get it to know it better. So get it to know that, what's this? So what's that tension like? If I'm going to get to know it better, it means you have permission to be tense. Isn't that great? As tense as you want to be. And because you're going to get to know it a little bit better. Just look at it, just get to know it. After you've gotten to know it, sometimes if you get to know it better and see it, sometimes it dissipates on its own. It's not sustainable. After a while, if it hasn't kind of dissipated or quieted down, you're welcome at that point to take a breath and see if you can relax and let go. Can you relax it, just soften it? Like a muscle you would relax, the thinking muscle you can relax. And then there's going to be less impetus to keep thinking. It might not be dramatic, but it'll be a little bit. And so then maybe it's easier to go back to your breathing and be calmer and settled. There's something else that's interesting. So I said, the process of thinking is composite, different things going on. It's not just physical, what's going on when we think, but it's also emotional. Especially if the thoughts are strong and you keep thinking in meditation a lot, or you just can't let go of it at all because just churning away, then chances are very good that there is that the fuel for the thinking you're having is an emotion. So, if I just robbed the local bank and I come to meditate here, chances are I'm not going to sit peacefully and quietly and just bliss out. Chances are I'm going to be thinking a lot. And if I look at what is fueling that thinking, I might find, maybe I'll find the guilt, or at least remorse, I hope. Or maybe it's fear. Every time the door opens, is that the police? And where are the escape routes? And I'm thinking and planning everything out, And so the fear is driving it. Or maybe that was easy. God, that was a lot of money. I'm going to do that again tomorrow, and it's greed. Greed is driving it, right? So it's possible to turn towards and the thinking and to feel, to notice, is there any emotion? So to be a little bit more realistic, because I don't think most of you are going to rob banks, I hope you don't. If you're a bank robber, know that if you do this practice regularly, pretty soon you're not going to be able to do that profession anymore. This practice tends to make people more ethical. And so now you've been warned. But say that people who plan a lot in meditation, it's very common people to plan a lot. It's very also common, not always, but not universal, but it's also common, if people plan a lot in meditation, that the fuel for that planning is anxiety, is fear. And if you let go of the planning thoughts, but don't address the anxiety will keep pumping out more plans. So the process of thinking, but quietly, calmly, notice you're thinking a lot, let go of the breath, and just notice it. Allow yourself to think and just notice that that's what's happening. Be mindful of that. But be mindful in such a way that you're not lost in the thoughts. You're kind of like you're stepping back and observing. Oh, this is what's happening now. This is what's happening. I'm thinking. Here's a human being that's thinking. Gill said there's a process, not just the content. What's the process? So one of the things you can notice, is there any emotions connected to it? If there's fear, like with planning, then where do I feel that fear in my body? Can I be present? Like last week, then you'd follow the instructions from last week. Feel it in your body, allow it to be there, open to it, and just kind of make space for you to feel that way without being caught in its orbit or caught in its field. Just notice. And chances are, if you feel the emotion in your body, you don't have to think so much anymore. Sometimes the content of what we think about is really just a symptom of something deeper going on. And the content is actually not that important. It's amazing how little important the content actually is when we consider the depth of our inner life. Inner life is much more important than what we thinking about. And so if we get, sometimes we're sidetracked by the content, it can seem so important. But if you can get below the content, and for example, and feel the emotion, then you're actually getting deeper down. Sometimes it's not comfortable, that's okay, but you're getting into it and be able to work through something. It could be remorse or guilt. It could be anger is the fuel of it. It could be anticipation. I know there's some people who like to think ahead. It's because it brings them delight to anticipate good things that are going to happen. And so it's the delight and the joy that it brings is the fuel that keeps the thinking going. In that case, people say, well, why should I make it go away? I'm having a good time. It's okay to have a good time thinking, but you're not going to deepen your process of meditation that way. So save that for a different time, not for meditation, if you have a good time thinking. The meditation is a different process. It's a process of becoming free, stepping back, and not being caught by what's going on. So here are two things I've suggested, three things. One is when you start thinking a lot in meditation, let go of your breath and just be aware that you're thinking. Look at the process. Is there any physical aspect to it, a location of it? Is there pressure, tension, energy that's physically connected to it? If so, bring your attention to that, hang out there, get to know it better. And if it's easy to relax, relax it. If it's not easy to relax, it's okay. Notice if there's any emotion connected to it. If there's an emotion connected to it, then you can perhaps just do mindfulness of the emotion, like we talked last week about. And one of the best ways to do mindfulness of the emotion is to feel that emotion where it is in the body. The reference point for this practice so much is the body. Come back to the body, come back to the body. Now, one of the reasons why the body is so useful is the content of what we think is sometimes really interesting. Or at least our mind thinks it's interesting. And so there's stories we tell ourselves. And the stories can be very compelling. I mean, I could probably evoke some easily, for some of you at least, say something that would get you starting to spin out about some event in your life. because I just reminded you, you know, like, you know, like if I tell you, like, don't think about your first kiss. Don't think about that now. And now we're going to meditate and focus on the breath. Now, that's probably, you know, I probably now, some of you have good memories, horrible memories, you know, all kinds of stories, and, you know, and like, it's hard to get off it now, because we kind of get caught up in the story. Sometimes the emotions that we feel are fueled by these stories that we tell ourselves. Sometimes the emotions fuel the stories, sometimes the stories fuel the emotion. But they're very compelling. And so it's very hard to get into the present moment because you get carried off in the story, the content. The body is not a story. So if we can connect to that part of thinking, which is not the storyline, but the process which is here and now in the body, it's a way of being present for the experience of thinking without getting swept off into the story. And it's amazingly powerful to learn how not to get caught in the gravitational pull of the story-making mind. So much of people's anxiety, struggles, problems have to do with the stories we tell ourselves. And we believe the stories. So if you don't have to get always pulled into the stories, you have much more freedom to question the stories, to consider them more realistically, to put them down when they're not useful, to pick them up when they are useful to consider. So this coming back to the body always is so useful. So either directly because of the sensations connected to it, the tension, or indirectly through the emotions and then to where the emotions are felt in the body. This whole process can also be supported by using what we call mental notes or labels. So sometimes it's helpful when you're thinking to actually say very softly, whisper in the mind, the word thinking, or more precisely, planning, or remembering, whatever it might be, because sometimes by naming it, it's a kind of a clear acknowledgement that we step back and we see it for what it is, rather than being caught in it and entangled with it. It's so easy to be glued to our thoughts, to become entangled with thinking. And sometimes by clearly naming it, it's like, I see you. It's kind of like, I see the thinking, it's part of me, but it's not really who I am. Or the thinking is there, and my power observation is here. Some freedom is found by the very quiet naming. Planning. Sometimes it's interesting to say it, the name, enough times until you begin feeling a little bit of distance, a little bit of freedom from it, a little less entangled. And the same thing if you feel then physically something in your body, like tension or pressure, sometimes it can be helpful to very quietly, softly name tension, pressure, making sure that the way you say the word in your head is relaxed. It's okay, tension. But sometimes there also it's, because it's such sometimes people are so quick to want to fix it, to get involved with it, caught in it, that by naming it instead of doing anything else, sometimes it's just a little bit easier just be with it in a simple way. With the emotions, same thing. Just name it. Fear, anger, whatever it might be. So is this making some sense? So do you have any questions about that instruction? Yes, so here. Maybe the batteries. Is it on? Are the batteries low? Here, take this one then.
So, when working on developing this skill, it can feel familiar to get caught up in thinking, working on a problem or a situation, and so. exploring not getting caught can sometimes feel like maybe an opposite pole of complacency, and is the idea of sort of being in the middle path so that you can look at without getting attached.
Exactly.
But not totally, I don't care, it doesn't matter, sort of confusion.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, middle path. But also to have some discernment about what's useful, what's helpful. So there might be times where it's important to think. And so then you quietly, calmly, you realize you're tense, you let go of the tension, but you might continue to be thinking. And there are other times when you realize that you don't need to think about this whatsoever. And you can just let it completely go and let the mind become completely quiet. I mean, you know, most people understand that it's useful to take a vacation. And we seldom give our mind a chance to have a vacation. In meditation, it can be very powerful. Finally, give the mind a vacation. One of the things that people discover who do some meditation, get into it, is that they can get all this conventional sleep and rest that they can get. But as they get more and more sense and deeper into their minds, they find the deep, deep weariness, exhaustion from a lifetime of thinking and churning and agitating and working. And it might be discouraging to feel that, but people understand this process actually feel encouraged, because as soon as you go into it deeply, that's where the healing can happen, the deeper rest can happen by feeling it, not by ignoring it. So sometimes it's not complacency, but sometimes it's really good to, you know, I don't need now to think about it. Does that make sense? And sometimes it's interesting to notice the content of thoughts. That's a part of the that's part of the overall picture. So you don't want to ignore it entirely. But one of the really interesting, irritating, fascinating, despairing things to notice about the content of your thinking is how so much of it is about you. So much of our thinking is self-referential in nature. And in fact, that's what keeps it so interesting. You know, if someone walked next to me and talked to me as much as I talk to myself, I would wonder about their sanity. I would beg them to stop. I'd get bored stiff. And when I realized how repetitive they were, I'd really wonder about them. But what's really one of the great kind of wonders of nature is how many people are just as fascinated by what they're thinking after the 500th time. And why is that? And partly it's because of who's the main character. And because we're trying to negotiate our life, we're trying to understand our life, we're trying to fix our life, our lives are important. We're important. And we're trying our best to find a way in this life. And we're often trying with our thinking and trying to find something and make it work. So it stays so interesting all the time. There's another way. Not to dismiss thinking. Thinking has its place in life. It's a beautiful, thinking is a beautiful thing at times. But it's good to have vacation. It's good to have another ability. And thinking keeps us a little bit, all too easily, on the surface of our life. And so while thinking has its place, if we want to go deep into the fullness of our life, the depth of our life, there has to be some ability to let the thinking go quiet or move to the background and not be the center stage. And so sometimes when you realize that the content of a thought is really self-referential a lot, and you kind of begin kind of getting a little bit wise about, after 500 times, I don't think I need to keep thinking this way. I don't think it serves me to keep thinking always the same way. maybe there's another way. Maybe it's okay for the period of the meditation to not try to figure out my life, solve my life, negotiate my life, plan my life, fix my life, have a better past by thinking. Maybe those 20 minutes, those 30 minutes you meditate, maybe it's another way. So maybe you can do that. It's enough maybe just then give yourself a little over to the breath and let the mind become quiet. But if you do find yourself thinking, then you can do this practice that I told you today. You can turn towards your thinking, calmly, quietly, recognize your thinking, maybe name it, thinking, planning. Feel the thinking muscle. If the thinking muscle can be relaxed, let it relax. Or just hang out with it for a while so it can relax itself. Or notice the emotion that's part of that thinking. And if there is an emotion that seems connected to it, then the emotions really do well, really served well by caring, non-reactive, non-involved attention. Whatever the emotion is, it's actually very healthy too, and very helpful to turn towards these emotions when they're strong, and just kind of be present for them in a very simple way. Not validating them, not justifying them, not criticizing them, but just holding them in attention, being clear and seeing what they are. So there's so much that goes on in the world of thinking, so you can turn towards it. And all in the service of seeing clearly what's going on, not being caught by what's going on so much, and hopefully with time, discovering how to be quiet and calm through wisdom, through understanding what's happening, not by overriding it, not by pushing away thoughts and understanding the process, but actually working through some of those things going on there so that the deeper calm becomes stable and connected to wise understanding of what's happening. It's making some sense? If it doesn't make sense, don't worry about it. One of my first teachers, Zen teachers that I studied with, said in Japan, Japanese teacher, he said, everything you need to know about Buddhism can be discovered by doing meditation on your breathing. Just stay on your breath. So it's so effective. And so there's whole schools of Buddhism, like Zen, where that's a primary thing to do is just focus on their breath. So it's possible to keep it really simple. So if you find yourself, like now, after this fourth week, there's too much instructions. You know, breath, and there's the body, and then there's emotions. Now there's thinking. I'm like, sit down to meditate. Where am I supposed to pay attention now? Just go back to the breath. Keep it really simple. And the instructions I'm giving are only relevant when it becomes clear that something is standing out and strong and makes it hard for you to be with the breathing. And then if it's hard to be with the breathing, just notice what that is like. Is it the physical thing in your body? Is it emotions? Is it thinking? And then you very gently, quietly do this mindfulness of that, recognize that. And some of the things I said today might help you to see clearly thinking as it's occurring, not be caught in the grip of the thinking, to relax the grip of thinking, and just kind of see it in a softer, gentler way. So the last thing I'll say is that I like to distinguish between thinking and thoughting. We don't use the word thoughting very much. Thoughting is what the mind does. The mind produces thoughts. It can be a relatively innocent thing to do. I mean, what else is it going to do, right? It produces thoughts. Thinking is when we get involved in a thought. And we have associated thinking, we react to it, we don't like it, we want to fix it, we want something different, we want to play with it, we want to get amused by it, we start doing things, we associate thinking. So we pick it up and get involved. If you're not involved or reacting or with a thought that arises, the thought is like a bubble It'll just rise and go. Just rise and go like that. If you sit here and have a thought, my first kiss, that could be just thought, it's gone. Or it could be my first kiss, he, she, why, it shouldn't have been, you know, you know, and off you are, you know, the stories and reactions and right, and you're thinking. So it's okay for the mind to thought. It's okay for the mind to think as well. But there's a world of difference between thinking and thoughting. And just think about how your thinking requires some involvement, some entanglement, some engagement. And so as you kind of, if you find yourself pulled into the world of thinking a lot, the process of calm, relaxed mindfulness begins teasing apart different elements of what goes on as you're thinking. And you find yourself becoming freer and freer of this world of thinking. And the freer you are of thinking, the more creatively and enjoyably you can think when you need to think. Thinking is not our enemy. It can be our friend. But it really helps a lot if you're not, if there's not glue between you and your thoughts. So I hope this makes some sense. So I all this is so fascinating to me. The longer I do this, the more fascinating it is. So all these different aspects, the breathing is fascinating. Can't believe, you know, I've been doing this now for close to 40 years, watching my breath. It just gets more interesting. Isn't that odd? You're thinking breathing is going to be boring. You know, how many breaths, you have to, you watch 3 or 4 breaths and you know what they are. And the body, you know, with our inner body, feel your body from the inside out and get to know your inner body, the embodied feeling of being in your body. Really know it from the inside out. It's just so fascinating. It's kind of, the world becomes rich, deep. And to really kind of be able to tune in and feel your emotions, even if you're a person who feels doesn't feel many emotions, but to know them and sense them and experience them, it adds so much richness to life. To really understand that all the different dimensions of thinking that are different than the content also adds depth to life. And then it's fascinating to become aware of this human activity, what it's like to be human, better and better, that you get the prize. And the prize is to be free of it all. To see it all deeply, to be connected to it deeply, to understand it deeply, and in the midst of that depth of connection, intimacy, to discover how to be free with it. So this is kind of the simple idea of being mindful. So next week is our last week. And next week, one of the important things I like to convey is not just to leave this as a meditation practice, but how this practice of mindfulness can be applied and useful in the rest of our life outside of meditation. In fact, I'd be a little bit sad if people thought that mindfulness was only for meditation itself. It's actually for applying in our life and using our life, and it's tremendous benefits from learning how to do it there. So I'll talk about that. I'll also talk about a little bit more of some of the ways to deepen mindfulness or strengthen mindfulness so that mindfulness can open up to what in Buddhism is called wisdom, the wiser, insightful understanding of our life. And that'll be our 5 weeks. Now, when this class is over next week, it's over. Good day. However, we've the last few years we started a thing here where you follow up the intro class with a few weeks of what's called the beginner's practice group, and we have some very experienced people. And Diana's going to be there some, right? The whole time? You're one of the five. One of the.
I'll be teaching one of the nights, but I'll be there all.
All the time, yeah. So Diana's going to be one, and Shinquan, are you involved in that? Your first way. So anyway, so some of the people who teach here, who are very experienced here, have been around for a long time, they're going to be leading this class. that is where there'll be some a little bit more teaching, some lots of chances for you to ask questions about your practice and get support for your practice, and it's a it's a nice way to do it. So anyway, so that'll start when this is over. If you want to come for it, I think it's how many weeks? 4 weeks? 3 weeks?
4 weeks.
So called Beginner's Practice Group. Same night, Wednesday night, same time, same place, different people. I mean, different up here. If you come, it's not. Sorry? Say it again, please. No, no, it just continues. And it's a drop-in thing, so if you can't come the first week, come the following week. And it's meant to be supportive and helpful and more relaxed, less formal than this, and they're less intimidating than me. It's easier to ask questions. And so, and if you have any questions for them today, they're happy to, to ask, answer questions or respond or anything at all. And so am I. So thank you all very much.